Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is now time for Inside Matters, Spiritual Talk, Healing Done Right, Spiritual Growth, 12-Step Indigo Meditation, and much, much more. Hosted by...
Hey, everybody. Guess who's back? Well, I don't know for how long. I've been really carrying around a lot of grief, lost my mother back in April, and so it's been really, really challenging for me to get online and do the show, even though I know that a lot of you have wondered where I went. Well, if you listened to a couple of my last shows, you would know that I lost my mother back April the 5th, and I've been going through a lot of challenges. One of them is the show, to tell you the truth, because she was one of my most ardent listeners, and I miss seeing her telephone line pop up on the board, the message board, the telephone call board. When the calls start coming in, hers is one of the first ones that popped up there. And I remember so many times I used to say, "Mother, I don't know if I want to do the show any longer. I don't know if it's worth it to do the show any longer. You know, my income has changed, and, I mean, for what I pay a month, I only do two shows a month when I could do a show every single day of the week for that amount of money." But my mother used to always tell me, "Have the show. You have that show because you don't know how reaching the effect may be. There may be someone way across the other side of the ocean who's waiting to hear what you have to say. And if you only touch that one soul's heart, you have touched someone with a blessing that they have been waiting for." So I would always do the show with her encouragement. And she really did encourage me with my topics. Sometimes she'd call me up and say, "Oh, are you going to have a show today? Well, what's the topic going to be? What's it going to be? Oh, that sounds so interesting. Yes, I'm going to be listening." And sure enough, her telephone number would be one of the first numbers that pop up in the studio on my message board. And it was just wonderful to see her and know that she was listening. So this topic that I have this evening is twofold for me. Some of you out there may be listening and grieving, maybe the reason why you're listening. Some of you may be out there listening because you're in recovery. Some of you may be like me. I've been in recovery, AA recovery, for 23 years this past June 1st. And I know that I have to be very, very careful about how I protect that recovery, because losses can be a trigger. And I've had quite a few losses within the last 3 months. Quite a few. So why don't we go ahead and start the show? Before I do that, let's look at the fact that not only are we going to be talking about recovery and grief and triggers to that, that loss of recovery and relapse. Nina Stevens had a Power Path message for July, and that Power Path message was friction of all things. And she was explaining that friction is caused by two hard surfaces grinding against each other and the resistance then producing a spark capable of ignition. Okay? The hard surfaces in this case can be anything from old calcified belief systems, meeting new truths that challenge actual experiences, to discussions from polar positions that turn heated and argumentative, to new exciting desires and intentions that meet old patterns of resistance. Now, I'm going to be going up to New York in a couple of weeks and sitting down with my siblings. And, well, we're going to be discussing some of mother's affairs. And those can be some friction-incited moments when you get siblings together in the same room and there's no mother to act as the referee, you know, so to speak. But we'll just have to make do because we're grown, we're adults, and we have to do our thing. We have to keep on living. We have to keep walking through our grief. We have to keep taking care of supporting our own challenges and supporting one another as the other goes through a challenge as well. So let's talk about coping with grief and loss. You know, there is no right or wrong way to grieve, but there are healthy ways to deal with the grieving process. And so I'm here to offer you some tips that can help. Now, let's start by talking about what the heck is grief. Grief is a natural response to loss. It's the emotional suffering you feel when something or someone you love is taken away. Often the pain of loss can feel overwhelming. You may experience all kinds of difficult and unexpected emotions. How about things like shock or anger to disbelief, guilt, and profound sadness? The pain of grief can also disrupt your physical health, making it difficult to sleep, eat, or even think straight. These are normal reactions to loss, and the most significant the loss, the more intense the grief will be. So how do we cope with this grief and loss? They tell me there's no right or wrong way to grieve, but there are healthy ways to deal with the grieving process. And these are some of the tips that can help. Coping with the loss of someone or something you love is one of life's biggest challenges. You may associate grieving with the death of a loved one, which is often the cause of the most intense type of grief. But any loss can cause grief, including divorce or relationship breakup, loss of health, losing a job, loss of financial stability, a miscarriage, retirement. Some people grieve over the death of a pet. Loss of a cherished dream. How about a loved one's serious illness? Loss of a friendship. Loss of safety after a trauma. Even selling the family home. Now, for me, my losses were on the 29th of March, I retired. That compounds loss of job. That same day, my therapist of 8 years retired as well. So there's that loss of someone in the mental health field that I could turn to if I had anything that was traumatizing me. 7 days after those two losses, I lost my mother. She wasn't sick or anything, so it was sudden. So here you go. I have retirement, which is the loss of a job, and as a result, that loss of that job is also a slight loss of financial stability because I don't have the same income that I used to have prior to me retiring from my job. And then I lose my mother, and I lose my therapist, all within 1 week's time. All of that. And I had all of this happens to me as I'm approaching my 23rd anniversary of sobriety. So that's why I'm having this topic with coping with grief and protecting your recovery. So back to grief. Even subtle losses in life can trigger a sense of grief. For example, you might grieve over moving away from home, graduating from college, or even changing jobs. Whatever your loss, it's personal to you. So don't feel ashamed about how you feel or believe that it is somehow only appropriate to grieve for certain things. If the person, animal, relationship, or that situation was significant to you, it's normal to grieve the loss you're experiencing. Whatever the cause of your grief, though there are healthy ways to cope with the pain that, in time, can ease your sadness and help you come to terms with your loss, find new meaning, and eventually move on with your life. Okay. Grieving is a highly individual experience. There's no right or wrong way to grieve. How you grieve depends on many factors, including your personality and coping style, your life experience, your faith, and how significant the loss was to you. Inevitably, the grieving process takes time. Sometimes it takes weeks. Some people grieve for months, others for years. So, the grieving process takes time. Healing happens gradually. It can't be forced or hurried, and there is no normal timetable for grieving. Now, for others, it may not take weeks or months. For others, the grieving process is measured in years. Whatever your grief experience, it's important to be patient with yourself and allow the process to naturally unfold. Let's talk about some myths and facts about the grief and grieving. Myth: the pain will go away faster if you ignore it. Fact: trying to ignore your pain or keep it from surfacing will only make it worse in the long run. For real healing, it is necessary to face your grief and actively deal with it. Myth: it's important to be strong in the face of loss. Ha. Fact: feeling sad, frightened, or lonely is a normal reaction to loss. Crying doesn't mean you are weak. You don't need to protect your family or friends by putting on a brave front. Showing your true feelings can help them and you. Myth: if you don't cry, it means you aren't sorry about the loss. Fact: crying is a normal response to sadness, but it's not the only one. Those who don't cry may feel the pain just as deeply as others. They may simply have other ways of showing it. Myth: grieving should last about a year. Fact: there is no specific time frame for grieving. How long it takes differs from person to person. Myth: moving on with your life means forgetting about your loss. Fact: moving on means you've accepted your loss, but that's not the same as forgetting. You can move on with your life and keep the memory of someone or something you lost as an important part of you. In fact, as we move through life, these memories can become more and more integral to defining the people we are. So how do we deal with the grieving process? While grieving a loss is an inevitable part of life, there are ways to help cope with the pain, come to terms with your grief, and eventually find a way to pick up the pieces and move on with your life. So you have to acknowledge your pain. You have to accept that grief can trigger many different and unexpected emotions. You have to understand that your grieving process will be unique to you. You have to seek out face-to-face support from people who care about you. You have to support yourself emotionally by taking care of yourself physically. Recognize the difference between grief and depression. Now, like I said earlier, for me, my grieving process was, because we listed divorce or relationship breakup, loss of health, losing a job, loss of financial stability, a miscarriage, retirement, death of a pet, loss of a cherished dream, a loved one's serious illness, okay, loss of a friendship, loss of safety from trauma, selling your home, and, of course, loss of someone that you love to death. I think I said that. And so for me, my grief is multifaceted. I retired. That was loss of my job. That was loss of financial stability. My therapist of 8 years, she retired, so that was loss of that support system. And then 7 days prior to all of that loss, I lost my mother. While I was facing 23 years of sobriety coming up on the 1st of June this year. So my losses were compounded to the degree of possibly causing me to have a relapse in my recovery, just, you know, falling apart. So that's why I thought it was important to talk about protecting your recovery while coping with grief and loss, because sometimes people have a difficult time grieving one loss. But try 4 or 5 of them compounded all at the same time. I mean, you know, that's a challenge. So here are our stages of grief. I studied this in college, too. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, in 1969, this psychiatrist introduced what became known as the 5 stages of grief. These stages of grief were based on her studies of the feelings of patients facing terminal illness, but many people have generalized them to other types of negative life changes and losses, such as the death of a loved one or a breakup. The 5 stages of grief are denial. This can't be happening to me. Anger. Why is this happening? Who is to blame? Bargaining. Make this not happen, and I, in turn, will do fill in the blank. Pray harder. I'll make sure that I stop lying. Anything. Just don't make this happen. So you start bargaining. And then there's depression. I am too sad to do anything. So then we lay around and we don't go anywhere and we just, you know, we don't eat and, you know, we just wallow in our depression. Then there's finally acceptance. I'm at peace with what happened, you know. If you are experiencing any of these emotions following a loss, it may help to know that your reaction is normal and that you'll heal in time. However, not everyone who grieves goes through all of these stages, and that's okay. Contrary to popular belief, you do not have to go through each stage in order to heal. In fact, some people resolve their grief without going through any of these stages. And if you do go through these stages of grief, you probably won't experience them in a neat, sequential order. So don't worry about what you should be feeling or which stage you're supposed to be in. That would be not a nice thing to do to yourself. Now, Kubler-Ross herself never intended for these stages to be a rigid framework that applies to everyone who mourns. In her last book before her own death in 2004, she said of the five stages of grief, they were never meant to help tuck messy emotions into neat packages. They are responses to loss that many people have, but there is not a typical response to loss, as there is no typical loss. Our grieving is as individual as our lives. And know, too, that grief can be a roller coaster. Instead of a series of stages, we might also think of the grieving process as a roller coaster full of ups and downs and highs and lows. Like many roller coasters, the ride tends to be rougher in the beginning. The lows may be deeper and longer. The difficult period should become less intense and shorter as time goes by. But it takes time to work through a loss. Even years after a loss, especially at special events such as a family gathering or certain holidays, we may still experience a strong sense of grief. So the symptoms: while loss affects people in different ways, many of us experience the following symptoms when we're grieving. Just remember that almost anything that you experience in the early stages of grief is normal, including feeling like you're going crazy, feeling like you're in a bad dream, or questioning your religious or spiritual beliefs. Some emotional symptoms of grief: it can be shock and disbelief right after a loss, and can be hard to accept what happened. You may feel numb, have trouble believing that the loss really happened, or even deny the loss. If someone you love has died, you may keep expecting them to show up, even though you know they're gone. You know? Sometimes you wonder, how come that person hasn't called me, and then you remember why. There can be sadness. Profound sadness is probably the most universally experienced symptom of grief. You may have feelings of emptiness, despair, yearning, or deep loneliness. You may also cry a lot or feel emotionally unstable. Guilt. You may regret or feel guilty about things you did or didn't say or do. You may also feel guilty about certain feelings. In other words, feeling relieved when the person died after a long, difficult illness. After a death, you may even feel guilty for not doing something to prevent the death, even if there was nothing more you could have done. The thought that keeps popping up in my brain about my mother was the day that she died. She called me. I saw her phone call come through. I let it go to voicemail. She left me a message. That was the last time I heard her voice. I did not pick up the phone when I saw her call come through. And a part of me will feel guilty about that. And I try not to feel guilty about that, because if I was meant to pick up that phone call at that moment, I would have picked it up. And if I had picked it up, I would not have the message on my telephone that she left for me. And I cherish that, because part of her message was, I got you. I got you. And I'll cherish that message for the rest of my life, because I know she's got me. You may experience anger. Even if the loss was nobody's fault, you may feel angry and resentful. If you lost a loved one, you may be angry with yourself, God, the doctors, or even the person who died for abandoning you. You may feel the need to blame someone for the injustice that was done to you. Then there's fear. A significant loss can trigger a host of worries and fears. You may feel anxious, helpless, or insecure. You may even have panic attacks. The death of a loved one can trigger fears about your own mortality. You know, I think about that too, you know, because the last of the previous guard has retired, and the changing of the guard is up front and center, and I happen to be the matriarch of that new guard change. That's not an easy thought that goes through my mind on a regular basis. All right? I mean, how can I take the place of the person that we all felt kept our family together? There's no way in the world I can step in those shoes. So, a significant loss can trigger a host of worries and fears. Like I said, you may feel anxious, helpless, or insecure. You may even have panic attacks. The death of a loved one can trigger fears about your own immortality or your own mortality. For facing life without that person or the responsibilities you now face, seemingly alone. Then there are the physical symptoms of grief. We often think of grief as a strictly emotional process. but grief often involves physical problems, including fatigue, nausea, lowered immunity, weight loss, weight gain, aches and pains, rashes, breakouts, insomnia. All of these things are a part of grief. So, we learn that the pain of grief can often cause you to want to withdraw from others and retreat into your shell. But having the face-to-face support of other people is vital to healing from loss. Even if you're not comfortable talking about your feelings under normal circumstances, it's important to express them when you're grieving. While sharing your loss can make the burden of grief easier to carry, that doesn't mean that every time you interact with friends and family, you need to talk about your loss. Comfort can also come from just being around others who care about you. The key is not to isolate yourself. I do that very well. I isolate. My AA sponsor tells me I insulate. My way of putting up my guard and protecting my feelings and my emotions from attack by others, you know, real or imagined. So some may turn to family and friends, and that's a good thing. And now would be the time to lean on the people who care about you, even if you take pride in being strong and self-sufficient. Rather than avoiding them, draw friends and loved ones close. Spend time together face to face and accept the assistance that's offered. And often people want to help but don't know how. So tell them what you need, whether it's a shoulder to cry on, help with the funeral arrangements, or just someone to hang out with. You know, go to the movies so you can stop thinking about all those other things that keep bombarding your brain with stuff that you have to do. If you don't feel you have anyone you can regularly connect with in person, it's never too late to build new friendships. Except that many people feel awkward when trying to comfort someone who is grieving. Grief can be a confusing, sometimes frightening emotion for many people, especially if they haven't experienced a similar loss themselves. They may feel unsure about how to comfort you. Oh, and end up saying or doing the wrong things. But don't use that as an excuse to retreat into your shell and avoid social contact. If a friend or loved one reaches out to you, it's because they care. You can draw comfort from your faith as well. So if you follow a religious tradition, embrace the comfort its mourning rituals can provide. Spiritual activities that are meaningful to you, such as praying, meditating, or going to church, can offer solace. If you're questioning your faith in the wake of the loss, talk to your religious spiritual guidance person or others in your religious community about how you feel. You might want to join a support group. Grief can feel very lonely, even when you have loved ones around. Sharing your sorrow with others who have experienced similar losses can help. To find a bereavement support group in your area, contact local hospitals, hospices, funeral homes, and counseling centers. You might want to talk to a therapist or a grief counselor. Well, I haven't been suffering from so many losses that I wasn't even aware that I was grieving all of these losses, you know, the job and, you know, the financial income and the therapist and all this. It was my doctor that said, you know what, you need to find yourself somebody else to talk to. And I didn't realize this, that I needed to go somewhere. And so I immediately put forth my brain in motion to find me another counselor. So I got one. So to me, I was making everybody happy that was saying that I needed somebody to talk to. And so rather than me thinking that I may have a nervous breakdown or something because I didn't do what people said that I should be doing, because I really didn't feel like I needed anybody to talk to, I just went ahead and got me somebody, all right, because I wasn't about to feel like I was going to have a nervous breakdown over my multi losses. So you might want to talk to a therapist or grief counselor. If your grief feels like too much to bear, find a mental health professional with experience in grief counseling. An experienced therapist can help you work through intense emotions and overcome obstacles to your grieving. You know, then that way, if you are grieving and it's causing you some physical or emotional harm or damage, you'll be able to work through it with a professional. Don't handle this on your own. You might also want to use social media. Now, you know, you use this with care. You can have memorial pages on Facebook and other social media sites. They have become popular ways to inform a wide audience of a loved one's passing and to reach out for support, as well as allowing to impart practical information such as funeral plans. These pages allow friends and loved ones to post their own tributes or condolences. Reading such messages can often provide comfort for those grieving the loss. Of course, posting sensitive content on social media has its risks. Memorial pages are often open to anyone with a Facebook account. This may encourage people who hardly knew the deceased to post well-meaning but inappropriate comments or advice. Worse, memorial pages can also attract internet trolls. There have been many well-publicized cases of strangers posting cruel or abusive messages on memorial pages. To gain some protection, you can opt to create a closed group on Facebook rather than a public page, which means people have to be approved by a group member before they can access the memorial. It's also important to remember that while social media can be a useful tool for reaching out to others, it can't replace the face-to-face support you need at this time. Okay, let's talk about the importance of taking care of yourself as you grieve. When you're grieving, it's more important than ever to take care of you. The stress of a major loss can quickly deplete your energy and emotional reserves. Looking after your physical and emotional needs will help you get through this difficult time. You got to face your feelings. You can try to suppress your grief, but you can't avoid it. You can't avoid it forever. In order to heal, you have to acknowledge the pain. Try to avoid feelings of sadness and loss. Only prolongs the grieving process. Unresolved grief can also lead to complications such as depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and health problems. You need to express your feelings in a tangible or creative way. So write about your loss in a journal. If you lost a loved one, write a letter saying the things you never got to say. Make a scrapbook, a photo album, celebrating the person's life, or get involved in a cause or organization that was important to your loved one. You may try to maintain your hobbies and interests. There's comfort in routine and getting back to the activities that bring you joy and connect you closer to others and can help you come to terms with your loss and aid the grieving process. Please don't let anyone tell you how to feel, and don't tell yourself how to feel either. Your grief is your own, and no one else can tell you when it's time to move on or get over it. Let yourself feel whatever you feel without embarrassment or judgment. It's okay to be angry, to yell at the heavens, to cry or not to cry. It's okay to laugh, to find moments of joy, and to let go when you are ready. Plan ahead for grief triggers. Now, grief triggers can come in many forms. And for those of us in recovery, they can come in forms when we least expect them. But for quote-unquote normal people who aren't in recovery from any addictive substances, your triggers will be holidays, anniversaries, and these milestones can reawaken memories and feelings, okay? Those of us in recovery, we have some other stuff compounding those triggers that you will go through. Be prepared for an emotional wallop and know that it's completely normal if you're sharing a holiday or life cycle event with other relatives. Talk to them ahead of time about their expectations and agree on strategies to honor the person you loved. Look after your physical health. The mind and body are connected. Remember that always. When you feel healthy physically, you'll be better able to cope emotionally. Combat stress and fatigue by getting enough sleep, eating right, and exercising. Don't use alcohol or drugs to numb the pain of grief or lift your mood artificially. When grief doesn't go away, then what? As time passes following a significant loss, such as the death of a loved one, it's normal for feelings of sadness and numbness or anger to gradually ease. These and other difficult emotions become less intense as you begin to accept the loss and start to move forward in your life. However, if you aren't feeling better over time or your grief is getting worse, it may be a sign that your grief has developed into a more serious problem, such as complicated grief or major depression. Complicated grief, that's the sadness of losing someone you love, and it never goes away completely, but it shouldn't remain center stage. Let me repeat that. The sadness of losing someone you love never goes away completely, but it shouldn't remain center stage. If the pain of the loss is so constant and severe that it keeps you from resuming your life, you may be suffering from a condition known as complicated grief. Complicated grief is like being stuck in an intense state of mourning. You may have trouble accepting the death long after it has occurred, or be so preoccupied with the person who died that it disrupts your daily routine and undermines your other relationships. Now let's talk about some of the symptoms of complicated grief. Intense longing and yearning for your deceased loved one, intrusive thoughts or images of your loved one, denial of the death or sense of disbelief, imagining that your loved one is alive, searching for your deceased loved one in familiar places, avoiding things that remind you of your loved one, extreme anger or bitterness over your loss, feeling that life is empty or meaningless. If your loved one's death was sudden, violent, or otherwise extremely stressful or disturbing, complicated grief can manifest as psychological trauma or PTSD. If your loss has left you feeling helpless and struggling with upsetting emotions and memories and anxiety that won't go away, you may have become traumatized. But with the right guidance, you can make some healing changes and move on with your life. So the difference between grief and depression. Distinguish between grief and clinical depression. It isn't easy, as they share many symptoms, but there are ways to tell the difference. Remember, grief can be a roller coaster. It involves a wide variety of emotions and a mix of good and bad days. Even when you're in the middle of the grieving process, you will still have moments of pleasure or happiness. With depression, on the other hand, the feelings of emptiness and despair are constant. Other symptoms that suggest depression, not just grief, include intense, pervasive sense of guilt, thoughts of suicide or a preoccupation with dying, feelings of hopelessness or worthlessness, slow speech and body movements, inability to function at home, work, or school, seeing or hearing things that aren't there. Now, I found that very interesting when I came across that statement because, honest, God is my witness. I was laying in my bed sleeping this morning, and I heard my name called, and it was my mother calling my name. And I said, "Yes, Ma," and nothing else came, you know. And I just put a smile on my face. You know, I hadn't read this grief thing, but I'm sure that means nothing. It was a beautiful, beautiful feeling that I got this morning, knowing that I heard my name called. So, can antidepressants help grief? As a general rule, normal grief does not warrant the use of antidepressants. While medication may relieve some of the symptoms of grief, it cannot treat the cause, which is the loss itself. Furthermore, by numbing the pain that must be worked through eventually, antidepressants delay the mourning process. Instead, there are other steps you can take to deal with depression and regain your sense of joy in life. When to seek professional help for grief. If you're experiencing symptoms of complicated grief or clinical depression, talk to a mental health professional right away. Left untreated, complicated grief and depression can lead to significant emotional damage, life-threatening health problems, and even suicide, but treatment can help you get better. Contact a grief counselor, professional therapist if you feel that life isn't worth living, wish you had died with your loved one, blame yourself for the loss or for failing to prevent it, feel numb and disconnected from others for more than a few weeks, are having difficulty trusting others, since your loss, are unable to perform your normal daily activities. Now, for this last little portion of our show, let's talk about grief and recovery. Recovering from the loss of a family member or friend can be as difficult as recovering from alcoholism or drug addiction in some ways. Both experiences can produce similar complicated responses: denial, that guilt, that sadness, that fear, and that anger. For this reason, grief associated with loss can feel even more intense for people already coping with other issues such as addiction or mental health disorders. Because of this, it is important that those in recovery protect their mental health by making self-care a top priority during this turbulent time. Here are the different ways grief can affect people and how to keep emotions in check without stifling feelings and sacrificing overall well-being. So, how are grief and substances connected? There is no one cause for substance use. People start using substances for a diverse range of reasons, and whether this use turns into abuse, dependence, or addiction really depends. However, there are two important consistencies related to this conversation. Consistency one. One trend that seems true for most human beings is that we generally don't like to feel physical or emotional pain. Consistency number two. One trend that seems true for most substances is that they generally do a good job numbing physical and or emotional pain. This may not explain why a person starts using substances in the first place, but it is usually an effect that becomes obvious pretty quickly. Enter grief stage left. When someone dies, the emotional pain is unimaginable. For many, grief triggers the most distressing pain they have ever felt, and in response to pain, human nature kicks in, and a person may think, how can I make this pain go away? How a person answers this question really depends on their unique coping strategies, their support, access to resources, stress level, tolerance of emotional pain, and past history of negative coping. However, some who have used substances in the past, even if they've only used casually, may feel that grief is a really appropriate time to take advantage of their pain-numbing effect. If a person turns to a substance to cope with grief on a consistent basis, all of a sudden, someone who never had a substance problem can develop a problem, and someone who already had a substance use disorder can see that disorder get even worse. But if you realize substances are becoming a problem, you can simply get things under control. Well, that's what people think. People think that if you realize substances are becoming a problem, you can simply get things under control. The answer is not exactly. Substance issues, regardless of how they start, can be very tough to get under control. If sobriety and long-term recovery were easy, we wouldn't be faced with a major substance use epidemic in this country. There are a lot of complex neurobiological challenges to achieving and maintaining sobriety. There are practical issues And then there is the mountain of emotional challenges that build once someone stops numbing. Numb? But I'm not even cold. When a person was using before the death, or the death instigated the substance use, using substances often mutes a person's ability to feel, process, and find ways to cope with emotions. As we already mentioned, this is why substances can seem appealing. They feel like a quick fix for immediate difficult emotions. The problem is, when you avoid tough emotions by numbing them, they don't just magically go away. Wouldn't that be great if they did? Part of grief is figuring out healthy ways to live with the pain of loss, making that pain easier to feel and manage over time. That is something that can be extremely difficult to do while using substances. So experiencing grief in sobriety. When someone gets sober and starts the recovery journey, it's not uncommon for grief emotions to come bubbling to the surface. While their loss was 5 months ago or 5 years ago, whether they experience one loss or a number of losses over time, a person in recovery often finds themselves facing the full depth of their painful emotions for the first time. No surprise, the onslaught of the emotions can feel so overwhelming that a person's first instinct is to do what they have been doing for months, years, or even decades, numb themselves with a substance. So how to identify coping that doesn't come in a bottle, pill, or powder? Sometimes a person abuses a substance because they don't know how to manage painful emotions any other way. Sometimes a person may know, in theory, how to cope and care for themselves, but using the substance seems a lot easier. Couple these scenarios with a neurochemical dependence, and this can be a recipe for relapse. If a person doesn't learn how to manage pain, discomfort, and distress, emotional and physical, in their recovery, they will continue to feel totally overwhelmed and ill-equipped to deal with pain when it comes up. So, where'd my support system go? When a person stops using a substance, isolation is common. While using the substance, people often drift away from friends and family who don't use that substance. At the very least, emotional distance is often created. At worst, years or decades worth of deep conflict, broken trust, or even estrangement can occur. Whatever the situation, the person can feel like their old friends and family aren't there for them in the same way, which can feel isolating. On the other hand, while abusing a substance, people often make new friends in the community around the substance. Whether they are your bar friends or friends a person uses other substances with, these are often close and meaningful relationships. Sobriety and recovery often force a person to distance themselves from these friends in a very deliberate way. And over time, these friends may have become the person's primary support, and suddenly they have to cut off the relationship in order to stay sober. This is a loss in and of itself, and worse still, Others may act like the loss of those friends isn't as significant or important because those individuals were also using substances. But those were the only friends that person knew. So what do you do? This is a complicated question. However, if you are in recovery or thinking about getting sober, here are a few tips. Consider loss that may come up for you and the reality that you may feel emotions you haven't felt. Now, I'm telling you, the emotional effect of losing a parent was an emotion that I have never felt in my entire life. Okay? Seek professional support, not just around recovery, but around grief. If you're feeling isolated, seek community. It may take time to rebuild relationships with old friends and family, but make efforts where it is possible. You know, you can consider the AA and NA and SMART program meetings. Those are self-management and recovery training. Develop new ways of coping. And know your triggers and have a plan. This is crucial for recovery in general, but with grief, it becomes doubly important. Grief triggers can quickly become relapse triggers. Know what your triggers are. Make relapse prevention plans around those triggers and have a plan for those moments when unexpected triggers arise. One of my major triggers has always been my family of origin. So, with that, I know I have to have a relapse plan around me. One of my relapse plans used to be my mother, and she's no longer here. So she can't be a part of my relapse plan. But you know what? God is good. There are other forms, and there are other stations, and there are other ways. And if I seek, I shall find them. If you seek, you shall find them as well. So be good. And stay blessed. And it's time for us to say, c'est la vie. Love to all. Thank you all for listening. I love you. Stay well. And God willing, we'll be together in 2 weeks. Okie dokie. Be good. Thank you.